Once we get to them, we just head back here, get back to the palace, collect Josh's dad, and then go home. Easy peasy. She snorted at that.
I'm glad you think so, she retorted. I have a feeling it's going to be anything but.
Still, she smiled at him and added,
But I don't have any better ideas, so go for it.
Charlie raised his spell shooter.
Yeah, please excuse the over-the-top optimism. Ben's not here, so I'm trying to make up for the lack of his really bad plans with a few of my own.
They smiled at each other, but it was a bit forced. Despite their effort at humour, they both knew how much trouble they were all in. Here in the void, he could use any spell he could remember, or even anyone he could imagine, as long as he could see it clearly enough and believe it strongly enough. No running out of spell pellets here. He summoned the spell he wanted, a fairly advanced level 3 tracking spell, and felt the small white pellet slide from the main chamber into the barrel. Next, he fixed Ben's parents in his mind, how they looked, how they acted, the many times he'd been over to their house for dinner or a sleepover. Holding his spell shooter aloft, he fired the spell. It rose high overhead, and then suddenly took a sharp left and shot off, quickly disappearing from sight. Charlie glanced down at his spell shooter, which still had what looked like a thick, glowing white rope sprouting from it. Carefully, he yanked on the rope, pulling its end free from his weapon, and wound it around his wrist. It tugged gently, and he let it pull him in the right direction.
Come on,
he told Natalie, and took off at a trot. She followed, catching up easily, and together they ran across the strange, twisted landscape, their minds giving their bodies the strength and stamina to keep going. Hours later, Charlie was starting to feel winded, despite every attempt to convince his mind that he wasn't. He slowed to a fast walk, then a regular walk, then a stumbling halt, and Natalie realized what was happening in time to slow herself and stop only a few paces beyond him.
Sorry. Oh, I need to catch my breath for a minute, Charlie told her.
He bent over, hands on his knees, and just stayed that way a moment. He was gasping for air and dripping with sweat. Natalie didn't seem any more affected than if they'd been out for a brisk stroll.
How much further do you think?
She asked, scanning their surroundings, her spell shooter at the ready.
I don't like the look of this place.
Charlie could hardly blame her. They'd been in what looked like desert, and now they were approaching something that resembled a forest, only a hideous one, with twisted, stunted trees that nonetheless produced such a thick canopy overhead that no light at all touched the forest floor. It was like a scene from a horror movie, so unsurprisingly, the trail appeared to be heading straight into it.
We're almost there, he promised. I'm guessing the hold-up somewhere in this forest.
Really?
Natalie clapped her hands.
Lovely. What are we waiting for, then?
And she strode straight towards the entrance to this hideously dark and twisted forest.
Wait!
Charlie could see at once that it was already too late, so instead of calling after Natalie, he took off at a sprint, catching up to her just as she stepped foot inside the forest. Something materialized out of the shadows, moving slowly into view as if it were literally growing out of the darkness. It was close to 7 feet tall, with dark, leathery skin, the deep red of fresh blood. It had long, curved horns sprouting from its forehead, a long, barbed tail, and great bat wings off its back. Charlie gulped. He'd seen something like this only once before, and it hadn't been the most enjoyable of experiences. Unless he was seriously mistaken, they had wandered across a demon underlord. The last time he and Ben had faced one, only Ben's connection to his parents had saved them. But Ben wasn't here now, and it looked like if they wanted to find his parents, he and Natalie would have to get past this fiend on their own. The demon narrowed its glowing red eyes at them, and Natalie grasped Charlie's arm, squeezing tight.
Charlie, is that what I think it is?
She whispered. He would have answered if he hadn't gone into shock. What were the chances? He knew demons existed in the void, of course, but running into one this powerful a second time, he was pretty sure that was unlikely.
Charlie?
The demon moved forward slowly, its eyes locked on Charlie, a cruel smile on its lips.
Little human. Puny little human. Why Am I frightening you?
The huge thing looked at Natalie and she gasped.
I believe you are a female. An elf.
The smile vanished as quickly as it had come.
I really don't like your kind, you know. Something about how you have locked us away for eternity and all that. I hope you don't mind, but I really will enjoy the pain I am about to inflict on you.
Charlie snapped out of it. Knowing Natalie was depending upon him, and Ben as well, made Charlie straighten up. He squared his shoulders, took a deep breath, and raised his spell shooter.
I don't think so. One more step, and it'll be your last, he stated as calmly as he could, pushing Natalie behind him.
The demon paused, a look of mild surprise crossing its face. Charlie thought fast. After their last experience, he'd spent hours researching demons of all sorts, intent on never being caught the same way again. Ice was most effective against demons, and Charlie knew exactly which spell he needed here. The only problem was, it was a level 5 spell, something that would be quite impossible for him. Impossible, at least, if he wasn't in the void. The demon was moving again, but slower this time.
I have to say, I am surprised. I didn't know you could talk. Maybe you aren't aware of what I am, no? Actually, that's not right. I can see you know what you are up against. Are you just stubborn, then?
Charlie wasn't listening. He summoned the pellet with his mind, knowing exactly when it popped into existence inside his spell shooter. Then he selected that pellet, slid it into the firing chamber, and took aim. For one horrible second, Charlie doubted himself. He'd never done something like this before. A level 5 spell. They were both going to die here. What a pathetic way for it all to end. But Natalie's hand was still on his arm, and it reminded Charlie who he was. He was Charlie Hornberger, and he had always been the best at anything involving using his mind. It was all about logic, and now that he knew how the void worked, logic was on his side. A backwards type of logic, maybe, but logic nevertheless. He knew that when it came down to it, in here, your mind was your greatest weapon, which meant he had all the ammunition he needed. He pulled the trigger, and the blue pellet exploded from the spell shooter, nearly knocking Charlie off his feet. Then it raced towards the demon, expanding outwards as it did, forming long, gleaming limbs that branched and split and interlocked together. It struck the demon full on, but then continued on around and even behind it, still branching and folding and intersecting until it had enclosed him completely. It was a cage made of solid ice. And now that it was finished, Charlie sent it a mental command, and it began to contract. The demon howled and reached out, both claws extended, but it was still too far away to reach Charlie and Natalie. Within seconds, the cage had shrunk enough that it was forced to yank its arms back inside, lest they get chopped off, and it let out a screech as its forearm brushed up against those icy bars. Charlie got up and brushed himself off. Natalie was staring at Charlie like she had never seen him before. He walked up to the cage of ice, and could just about see the demon inside.
What have you done, human? The demon shrieked. This should not be possible.
Charlie shrugged. Sorry about that, old chap, but looks like you'll be in here for a bit. Don't worry, it'll melt over time, and then you can get back to meaninglessly hunting down and killing things. He waggled his eyebrows up and down. The demon gave a roar, and Charlie stepped back despite himself, then straightened. He looked back at Natalie. Let's go, shall we? And he led the way into the forest. After putting some distance between them and the demon, whose roars of frustration were now a distant sound, Natalie stopped.
That was amazing, she declared breathlessly. Where'd you even get a spell like that?
Charlie sagged a bit, exhausted now, but he smiled at the compliment. After Ben and I ran into a demon last time, I did some research into some of the most theoretically effective spells against them. In truth, no one really knows, as there is so little interaction with them, but it made sense to me. She was still studying him.
What level was it?
She asked quietly. He shrugged, trying for as nonchalant as he could manage, even though his pulse was still racing.
Level 5?
5?
Natalie shook her head.
I had no idea you could fire spells of that rank.
Yeah, well, that makes 2 of us, he admitted. But I thought I could, and around here.
He waved at the forest in front of them and the desert behind them.
Thinking makes it so.
That got a quick laugh out of her.
I'll try to remember that, she promised. Meantime, shall we see where that trail takes us next?
Absolutely, he agreed. He was grinning as he continued walking into the completely terrifying, pitch-black, utterly dead forest. Ben and the other guardians were amazing back on their world, absolutely. But down here, in the void, it was all Charlie Hornberger. Hours later, Charlie would have been glad for it to have been someone else.
How many more of these things are there?
He panted, stepping over the latest felled goblin. It felt as if they had been battling the vicious things every few feet, though in the near dark it was hard to tell.
No idea,
Natalie replied from beside him.
But that looks like the last of them for now, at least.
She gestured ahead.
And that looks promising.
Charlie followed her over to a massive tree that looked like an oak, but with the smooth, silvery skin of a beech. In the deep shade of the forest, it practically glowed. Etched into its bark was something that looked halfway between a rune and a picture, showing storm clouds with what looked like ball lightning beneath them.
That's got to be the spark storms, he agreed. We're definitely in the right place.
Or the wrong one,
an unfamiliar voice suggested. Charlie spun about and found himself staring down the barrel of a very large shotgun.
Spell shooters on the ground, the gun wielder instructed.
They heard the sound of the gun being cocked, and Charlie and Natalie were quick to comply.
Good. Now walk,
the stranger ordered, tapping first one and then the other on the shoulder with the gun barrel. They marched past the big tree, the newcomer bringing up the rear and calling out directions as they went, taking them deeper and deeper into the forest. Eventually, the canopy above thinned enough to allow little glimpses of light to flicker down. Between that and Charlie's eyes adjusting, he found himself able to see at least well enough to not walk into yet another tree. They stepped past a pair of large trees and into a wide clearing, one littered with tents, sleeping bags, bedrolls, and even hammocks. Several people were moving about the space and turned to stare. Their guide didn't even pause, and instead directed them towards a modest tent on the far side. A few people stood talking in front of the tent, and when Charlie saw 2 of them, he felt his throat seize up for a second. Despite hearing all about what Ben had seen, he was still stunned to see Greg and Jane Greenwood alive after all this time. They looked exactly how Charlie remembered them. Mr. Greenwood looked like an older version of Ben, with scruffy hair and the addition of a silly moustache. Mrs. Greenwood was as lovely as ever, looking all neat and fashionable, especially next to her husband. It was she who noticed them first.
Greg, is that... They can't be.
She rushed over, Ben's father following.
Charlie, is that you?
She engulfed him in a hug. The large man with the shotgun stepped back, and the stern look on his face was replaced with concern. His eyes flicked between Charlie and Ben's parents.
Mr. Greenwood, I apologize if I made an error. I caught these two while patrolling the outskirts of our territory.
Greg just clapped him on the shoulder good-naturedly.
Don't worry about it, Jake. You've done us a service. Charlie is an old friend.
The man called Jake looked relieved as he took the opportunity to move away a few paces, but he still stayed close, eyes turning to the forest around them. Jane pulled back and looked at Charlie more carefully this time, the look in her eye becoming sharper.
Sorry to ask, but where is Ben?
A tremor ran through her voice. Greg was looking at him intently. Charlie raised his hands.
Last time I saw him, he was with a few friends of ours, but we thought we'd pop over to help you come and join him.
Greg barked a laugh, lessening the tension somewhat.
Charlie Hornberger, member of the Royal Institute of Magic, and here to rescue us, no less.
He shared a look with his wife. Then he turned to Natalie.
And who might this be?
Natalie Dyer, she answered,
dropping into a graceful curtsy. "It's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. and Mrs. Greenwood. I've heard a great deal about you."
"Natalie was the first friend we made in Tasia, and the best," Charlie explained. Greg smiled. "So, not to burst your bubble, but we're kind of stuck here in the void, in case you didn't know." He had the same glint in his eye that Ben got. "Not that I don't appreciate it, and to be honest, I'm beyond impressed you found us. There is even a demon in that forest you just came through." Natalie and Charlie shared a look which Greg didn't miss. "Hang on, did you..." "Actually, no. You can tell me some other time."
"Where is Ben?" Jane asked again, her question more penetrating this time. Charlie had been hoping he could brush it off until they were out of the void. Charlie sighed.
"He and the other guardians are back at Suktar's castle, fighting him," he answered. "We came into the void through the dungeon, which is where your bodies are. If we go out the same way, you shall be able to return to your bodies easily enough. Then we'll break you out of the cells, and we can all go help Ben and the rest."
Ben's dad nodded.
"I assume you gathered all the armor together then, or you wouldn't even be trying this, yes?" "Okay, Jane, it's time."
Ben's mother took a deep breath and let it out slowly. She looked around, and Charlie only then noticed that at least 20 to 30 people had gathered around them, people of all types and races. There were dwarfs, elves, humans, and even some goblins. She reached over and squeezed her husband's hand, and then approached a tall elf who looked like the most typical wizard Charlie had ever seen. He was only a few steps away, so Charlie could hear what Jane said.
"It's okay, Ulta. You can let go of the illusion."
The old elf nodded, and suddenly the whole area around them seemed to blur and shift, and before Charlie's eyes he saw the hammocks and tents transform into proper houses. The small forest changed into towering trees, and there was a stream that moved through it all. Jane turned back to Charlie, spreading her arms.
"This has been our home for what seems like hundreds of years. As you can see, we don't age here, but you feel the time regardless. It is time to leave, but we need to do it the right way."
She gave Greg a small frown as he tried to protest, and brushed past him, hooking her arms in between Natalie and Charlie's.
"I'll show you around."
It was a very weird experience for Charlie. He'd just survived death more times than he could count, and now, after receiving a guided tour of this beautiful village, he was sitting at a farewell feast for Ben's parents as a guest of honour. Even though he knew logically very little time was passing, he still found it hard not to be impatient to get going. Finally, Greg, who must have noticed him fidgeting, came over to where he was sitting and whispered into his ear,
"Charlie, you can relax. This part of the void is different to other areas. While time is always slower inside the void compared to outside, where we are, it hardly moves at all. You could be here for weeks and almost nothing would have happened back in the palace."
He gave him a pat on the back and a reassuring smile and moved away. It still felt wrong to Charlie to be sitting here having a good time, but thankfully, Charlie had read about this type of thing in one of the many books he'd found in the library when previously researching the subject. Besides, if Ben's own parents weren't worried, they must be pretty certain on this point. Natalie was enjoying herself, as she always seemed to. The feast went late into the night, and Charlie couldn't remember when he got to bed. He woke the next day to a banging on the door.
"Charlie Hornberger, it's time to go."
He groaned and tried to pull a pillow over his eyes. Ben's mum always seemed to wake them up earlier than needed. He opened one eye to make a comment to Ben, and then realized he definitely wasn't at his friend's house. Suddenly remembering where he was, he jumped out of bed and got dressed immediately. As he walked out of the hut, buckling on his holster, he was shocked to see hundreds of people now lining the streets. Jane and Greg were there, as was Natalie. Greg raised his hand to the crowd in farewell, and as they walked through the streets, a roaring cheer followed them. When they finally left the village, Charlie addressed the Greenwoods.
"They seem to like you."
Greg grunted.
"They should.
We've kept them safe for a long time, and now we've promised them something they didn't dare hope for. All going well, we'll be back to let them out." After walking for what felt like about an hour, Charlie recognized where they were. They immediately began retracing Charlie and Natalie's path. Their journey was surprisingly uneventful. It left Charlie wondering why he and Natalie had been so unlucky at encountering so many goblins and other creatures along the way there. Then, as they were topping a small hill, he heard what sounded like whispering and glanced over just in time to catch a glimpse of someone or something ducking out of sight. Ah, of course, it wasn't that there were no threats out there anymore, but apparently none of them wanted to go up against the leaders of Clan Sparkstorm. It was hard to tell how long it took them, as the sky stayed exactly the same, but when they finally stood in front of the cages, Charlie felt drained. Jane looked at her husband, and then around at what had been their home for a few years in the real world, but many more for them.
"I can't believe we are finally going back home, Greg," she said with a gentle smile.
"I know. Feels unreal," Ben's father agreed.
He pulled out a piece of charcoal and quickly sketched some runes on the ground. Charlie was glad to see they were the same ones he had worked out for himself. While Ben's parents evidently could have done this any time since their capture, it would have meant their deaths for sure. Now, finally, they could do it in the knowledge that even though there was a battle on the other side, they would probably have enough space to get free and then join the fight on their own terms. The spell activated, and Ben's parents vanished, leaving just Charlie and Natalie again.
"Ready?"
she asked him with a grin.
"Definitely,"
he answered. And together, they exited the void and returned to their bodies, which lay on the corridor floor in Sektar's dungeon. The transition back wasn't quite as weird, but Charlie still found himself on his face. Somehow again, Natalie was standing there like nothing unusual had happened. She smiled knowingly, a twinkle in her eye. After he scrambled up, they grabbed their spell shooters and prison keys where they had left them and went to find the correct door.
"Greg? Jane?"
Charlie shouted.
"Over here,"
they heard from behind the third door down. Charlie fumbled with the various keys on the chain and within moments had the door open. Greg was looking around the dungeon, and Jane had a look of amazement in her eyes.
"Charlie, honestly, I can't believe you came to the void and broke us out. Greg, is this really the same Charlie?"
Greg just laughed and shook his head. Suddenly, Natalie held up her hand.
"I hear someone," she declared, gesturing towards a side corridor. "Down there."
"Well, let's not keep whoever it is waiting,"
Ben's dad replied. He led the way down, his own spell shooter at the ready, and Charlie couldn't help but marvel at the change. Ben's dad had always been a cool guy, fun and a little goofy, but seeing him so quietly deadly still blew Charlie's mind. Charlie, however, had to ask the obvious question.
"Mr. Greenwood, how is it you both still have your spell shooters?"
As bizarre as it was to see Ben's dad armed, the stranger thing was how the Dark Elves had apparently left the spell shooters lying around in the cell with them. "Simple, Charlie. When we entered the void, both Jane and I were holding our spell shooters. As long as we remained in the void, not only could we not be harmed, but they wouldn't have been able to remove anything in our possession either." Greg looked up and down the corridor, eyes taking everything in. "You know, it was pretty ingenious of you to work out that the key to the cell was needed, instead of just blasting it open with your spell shooter. As the Dark Elf King knew we might come out of the void at any time, there are some pretty brutal spells on the door to the cell you broke us out of. That key you have is the only way to open the cell without some really nasty surprises." Charlie swallowed a lump that had formed in his throat. He hadn't thought of that.
"Yeah, just lucky, I guess."
They neared the cells that were further along, and now Charlie could hear the sounds of fighting as well. At the end of the corridor, he spotted an open cell door, and together they all raced towards it. Inside the cell stood two goblins, practically twins of the two he and Natalie had faced before. They were trading blows with a tall man with thick blonde hair, sharp blue eyes, and a slightly stuck-up nose. Charlie almost shouted with relief, as it was Arnold Whistletop, Joshua's father. As they approached, Charlie could see that Arnold lacked a spell shooter. He was fighting the goblins off with nothing more than his bare hands and a small wooden stool. Evidently, after he and Natalie had dispatched the other goblins, these ones had decided to take it out on Arnold. It was remarkable he'd held them off for as long as he had, but he was also clearly tiring. Ben's dad made short work of the two goblins, however, eliminating the pair with a single spell. Arnold turned to face his rescuer, and his eyes widened.
"Hello, Arnold," Ben's father said.
"Greg," Joshua's father exclaimed, and then he spotted Ben's mum.
"Jane, you're free. But how?"
He then noticed Natalie and Charlie standing there just behind them.
"You two, aren't you those apprentices that hang around Greg's son? How in the name of all that is good are you both here in Saktar's palace?"
For a second, Charlie felt intimidated, but then he got hold of himself. It didn't matter that this man was a high-ranking warden. They had to get back and help Ben. Besides, based on what he understood from the guardians, Arnold would be aware of their duty, even though it had been passed to his son.
"Mr. Whistletop, this might come as a bit of a shock, but the guardians united, found Elizabeth's armour, and are right now, this very second, most likely fighting just above us to end King Saktar's rule."
Arnold's eyes widened suddenly as he realized what Charlie was saying.
"My son is here. Then what are we waiting for?"
He turned and slapped Greg on the shoulder.
"Greg, before we launch up there to save our sons, I want you to know that I honestly didn't blame you on what happened with Barry. I could tell he was somehow being used. The night before it happened, he came back to himself and told us something was wrong. He didn't know what, but he said there were moments in his memory where it was just blank. It didn't make it any less painful, of course, but I understand."
The two men shook hands, and then Ben's mum smiled in what seemed like relief.
"Now, where are our sons?"
Ben's father asked, sharing a determined look with Joshua's father. Charlie would have been surprised if he'd seen the look on his own face then. If there was any way he could help his best friend defeat the Dark Elf King, then he was determined to do it.
"Follow me,"
he replied, and led the others up the stairs to the next floor. He was fairly certain he knew where the throne room would be. Saktar was about to be in for a big surprise. Chapter 34 The Head Guardian. Ben stared, unseeing, at the grand throne room, his mind still replaying the scenes he had just witnessed. Alex, that elf captain, even Draven, everyone from the Institute facing defeat and death, all of Britain about to be overrun. Saktar was right. It was all over. No matter what happened here, and it wasn't looking very promising, they had already lost. Beside him, Joshua was bleeding heavily, a rag tied around his arm in an attempt to stem the flow. Abigail was already curled up on the floor, rocking gently back and forth, and the Dark Elf King stood over them, gloating.
"You see," he declared, "you are the ones who are finished, not I. Before the sun has set, my armies will have destroyed your precious Institute and all its little friends. We will hold Britain, and from there spread to the rest of the Seen Kingdoms. Soon, the whole world will be mine."
He raised his massive black sword once more.
"So, for the final time, surrender. Lay down your weapons, relinquish the armor, and I will allow you to live."
His lips curved into a cruel smile.
"It is the best offer you will get. I promise you that."
For a moment, Ben was sorely tempted. He was tired and sore, and felt beaten in both body and spirit. Who were they kidding? How had they ever thought they could stand against someone like Saktar? It was madness. And if they continued, if they didn't take this one chance, they really would be throwing their lives away. He sighed, and lifted the sword a final time, but not to brandish it. He started to reverse it, offering it hilt first to the Dark Elf King waiting before him. As he did, Ben's eyes caught the hilt, and the image reflected there of a sandy-haired boy with bright purple eyes. There was something wrong with that, though. He stared at the sword, somehow transfixed for a few moments. Then, as though through a fog, a thought drifted to him, and he mumbled to himself, "I'm pretty sure I don't have purple eyes." Suddenly, it all made sense. Tightening his grip, he ground the tip of the sword into the floor and forced himself to stand and look the King of the Dark Elves in the eye. The towering elf's eyes narrowed, immediately knowing that something had changed. Ben's mind became clear, finally. Suktar had already defeated them, and even had possession of the sword. But Ben could only guess that it was useless to him unless Ben himself gave it of his own will, which he almost had. Suktar had gambled and given him the sword back, and that gamble hadn't worked. Ben placed both hands on the hilt of the gleaming sword, ribs screaming, body aching so strongly that darkness crept in on the edges of his vision. He knew he was vulnerable, but again the powerful elf held back. He obviously still thought Ben might give in. Taking a few short breaths to steady himself, he spoke, only managing to get out a few words at a time.
"You really want this armor, don't you? Could have killed us at least 5 times already."
He closed his eyes as he felt blood trickling down his side.
"Seems to me that you need us alive to..."
He swayed for a second and almost passed out, dropping to one knee. As he pressed his head against the cool flat of the blade, he saw, out of the corner of his eye, Joshua shaking his head and then looking up. A strange sense of peace suddenly washed over him. Maybe they would die here, a possibility looking all the more likely. But somehow, that thought didn't concern him so much anymore. With so much death everywhere, why was his life so precious? Ben focused on the blade right in front of him, focused like he had so many times with his spell shooter. In his mind, he felt a white light pulling him towards it like a beacon, and he thought he could hear someone calling his name. It dawned on him that this fight wasn't his alone. It wasn't him against Suktar. It was him and his friends, and something a whole lot bigger. With a burst of light, the sword in his hands turned yellow and then white. All shadows banished instantly. Ben's mind came into sharp focus, and he stood up, pain dissipating and already almost gone. As he brought his eyes up to Suktar, there was something else in the Dark Elf King's eyes that he hadn't seen before. A tinge of weariness.
"I will give you the offer one last time, Greenwood," Suktar roared. "Take it, or I will end you."
Ben nodded calmly, and turned to see his two friends now also standing, their pieces of the armor also now emanating the same bright, concentrated glow. Joshua's wound was emanating a bluish-white glow, brighter than the rest. Somehow, the power from the shield was either healing him, or at least concentrating and combating the pain caused by it. He looked at his own form and saw a series of bluish bright lights in the areas he'd been struck hardest.
"Yes, I believe you will try that for real now."
Joshua came close, and they bumped shoulder to shoulder, turned to each other and nodded. This was it now. Win or die. Suktar sneered down at them.
"Pawns. Pathetic slaves to a greater plan. I tried to free you from it, but now that chance is over."
He swung his colossal sword in a great sweeping arc, black flame shooting from the blade's edge. Joshua stepped forwards without hesitation and raised the glowing circle of light that was Elizabeth's shield. As the mighty weapon came down, Ben twisted, his back against Joshua's for a moment, and as the black sword smashed into the circle of gold, he spun to the side, ending up behind Suktar. With a smooth, diagonal slash to finish the move, he smashed the back piece of armor off Suktar's side. Suktar twisted with the blow and threw a bolt of purple power straight at Ben's face, who just got the sword up in time to block it. Despite that, it threw him back a few feet or more, and he barely stayed standing. Pressing his advantage, the king moved quickly towards Ben, strong arms somehow moving his great sword in rapid attacks, each one a potentially lethal blow. Ben fought like he never had before, partly from his own desperation, and partly thanks to the increased skill and strength that the sword was pouring into him. He managed to parry each sword swipe and thrust, and block each explosion of blazing purple fire and glittering black ice. But despite the sword's power, He was tiring. The king raised his foot and kicked Ben hard in the chest, throwing him back into a column, cracking his head against the cold marble.
"Now die, Greenwood,"
snarled the elf, sword sweeping down mercilessly, only to crash against the shield. The sword descended again and again, but each time Joshua was there, screaming unknown curses. Ben shook his head and stamped his feet to get his balance back. A burst of purple came at them, but somehow, this time rising up through the floor. Ben quickly linked arms with Joshua and shot a spell up at the ceiling, targeting a beam farther into the room. The spell latched on and tugged them into the air, the floor bubbling and steaming behind them. After landing heavily, they turned back quickly, sure that a bolt of purple energy would already be upon them. Instead, in between them and Saktar was Abigail, only coming up to the massive elf's chest. She walked calmly towards him, and the elf slowed his advance and then stopped, a look of scorn crossing his face.
"Humans, so frail. You cannot use that helm. It would destroy you. Just take it off and leave."
Abigail didn't seem to hear him.
"You hurt me,"
she announced, her voice quiet and calm, but hard underneath.
"You hurt my friends. You've hurt a lot of people. Your own people don't even want you. Something has to change. You can't keep hurting people.
No more." Her eyes flared with light like the helm that surrounded them, increasing until Ben could only squint at her from the corner of his eye. Saktar raised a hand to cover his face while defiantly attempting to stare her down. It was the strangest of sights. A tiny, frail human child staring up at a towering dark elf. But in the end, even he was forced to back away, averting his gaze from the little girl who stood so fiercely before him. The brightness grew and grew and suddenly blinded them all. When Ben could see again, Abigail was gone. He looked around, frantically searching. Saktar was still standing but seemed unsteady on his feet, his great cape singed off and his crown gone. His hands still gripped the black sword, but it had only a dull sheen to it now.
"Abigail? Abigail!"
Ben couldn't believe she was gone. Saktar chuckled darkly.
"Well, she had more spirit than the both of you put together, but looks like even she couldn't stand against me."
Rage and grief fought in Ben as he stared up at Saktar, but it was Joshua who spoke, voice surprisingly calm. "Ben, look. Something's changed." He pointed with his spellshooter, and Ben looked this time, really looked. Saktar's eyes were almost dim. The glow faded to little more than a faint tinge.
"Huh."
He smiled, a fierce jolt of pride shooting through him. A sad smile, but a strong one. Abigail had always been the quiet one, offering a supporting word here, a little advice there. But such courage. Somehow, here in the final battle where it counted, she had negated the Dark Elf King's magic. Tears trickled down Ben's face as he raised the sword and felt Joshua's shoulder press up against his.
"Like we drilled, Josh. We do this for Crowbeg, for Abigail, for England and the Queen."
Joshua nodded and took a deep breath.
"For all those who have died in this pointless war."
Ben had a brief thought of whether Joshua had seen equally horrible things as he had when Saktar had spun that illusion. He cast the idea aside and moved forwards. They didn't charge, though. They'd learned their lesson from those first practices with the box trolls, all the way up to just moments ago. Ben advanced slowly, carefully, and Josh kept pace beside him, shield up and ready. Saktar snarled and struck, bringing his sword down in a fierce overhand blow. But Josh caught the blade and turned it aside without giving an inch. Ben used the moment to dart in and cut his foe a second time, this time on the arm.
I will grind you to dust,
Saktar roared, magic gathering around his hands. But then it shattered like spun glass, and he howled with rage and possibly some pain as well. Somehow, his power was unstable. Whatever Abigail had done, it was working. Ben and Josh were able to get past his guard a third time, Joshua beating that black sword out of the way, and Ben lashing out to slice the Dark Elf King along the cheek. With each successful strike, Saktar grew angrier and angrier, losing his poise and his calculating menace and lashing out more erratically. Ben and Joshua, on the other hand, improved their coordination with each attack, learning to work together more smoothly, staying out of each other's way, but maximizing their effectiveness as a team.
You are fools,
the Dark Elf shouted as he backpedaled, trying to put some distance between himself and his opponents.
You think you're doing this on your own? You're not. You're just puppets of the High Council.
Ben closed the distance again. I'm done listening to you. Their swords crashed together, bright white against deepest dark, slashing and stabbing. Joshua there to parry any counterattack that got past Ben's enhanced reflexes. The power was incredible, nothing like he had ever experienced. Suddenly, Saktar's sword was flying through the air, and before Ben could stop himself, he had smashed the sword into Saktar's side, the blade biting deep. The powerful Elf King crashed to the ground and landed hard on his side, hand clutching the wound, pain distorting his face. Ben stepped forward to deliver the death blow, to end all this. He raised the sword high and felt the need to drive it home, the urge to kill this horrible monster. The sword throbbed and pulled at him. He saw Joshua standing there, a snarl on his face, looking truly terrifying. The king just lay there, defeated. All Ben had to do was drive the blade into his foul heart. But instead, he did something that only someone as stubborn as him could ever do. He forced the sword down to his side and took a step back. It was like pushing through a brick wall.
Josh, something's wrong, he said softly.
Joshua looked at him, rage still in his eyes.
What are you talking about, Ben? Kill him. He's a murderer. Abigail is dead. Krobig is dead. Our parents, all those people.
Ben stood there, looking at his friend, and slowly shook his head.
You're right. But at the same time, something is wrong.
He slid the sword into its scabbard, holstered his spell shooter, and put his hand on Joshua's shoulder, whispering close to his ear. Put the shield away. Joshua visibly struggled, but finally did as asked. Saktar was breathing hard, blood pooling around him. A purple glow seemed to be seeping from the wound. He looked up at Ben.
Ben, Grimwood, I am actually impressed.
For the first time, there was not a trace of mockery in the king's voice. Instead, he seemed to be looking at Ben for the first time.
I didn't think you would be able to harness the power of the armor. And I certainly didn't think you would be able to overcome it if you did. The High Council definitely did not expect that.
Ben's surprise must have shown on his face, because Saktar nodded his head slowly at their confusion.
Oh, yes,
he whispered, coughing up some blood now.
The pieces of armor that you wear, as I'm sure you have surmised, are sentient entities. However, it is more than that. They are, in fact, a magical binding of such incredible power. It must have taken at least half, if not three quarters, of the council to pull off.
He grimaced in pain, a surge of purple energy again streaming out of the wound.
What is unique about this armor, my young friend, is that it has a purpose of its own. That purpose is so deeply embedded in the armor, so much a part of its very fabric, that it cannot help but push towards that purpose at every turn.
Ben's mind was racing. He wished he had Charlie with him right now. How could he know if the Elf King was telling the truth?
"Why are you telling me this?" he demanded. "I don't have a single reason to trust you."
Saktar gave a brief, pained chuckle.
"Of course you don't. But I'm dying now. My usual healing power has somehow been nullified by some piece of the armor, most likely the sword. Ben, listen to me. I know you think I am evil, and perhaps I am. I cannot even tell anymore. I was once part of the High Council, but I did not agree with their basic doctrine, so I left."
He broke off again, pain racking his body. Ben stared in shock while the Dark Elf recovered. How could this be possible? He tried to focus, but Saktar was talking again, quietly, forcing his words out from between clenched teeth.
"You didn't know that, did you? But it's true. I was like all the rest of them, playing games with other people's lives. Good, evil, none of that matters to them. They thrive on conflict, because as long as there's turmoil and confusion, the council stay in control."
He laughed softly and shook his head.
"I left because I didn't approve. Why keep building up one army or kingdom just to tear it down the second it starts becoming powerful enough to be considered a threat? Why not just build your own kingdom and eliminate all the threats?"
He sobered.
"The High Council did not take my defection well. They always think they know better than anyone about anything. They vowed to destroy me, and they've spent centuries trying. How do you think Elizabeth got so powerful so quickly? The High Council was backing her."
He looked up at Ben, eyes dull now.
"And now they're using you, and you don't even know it."
Ben looked around at the soldiers surrounding them, at the high ceiling and towering columns, and at the huge doors at the end of the throne room. How many people had been ordered to their deaths here? How many had been enslaved here in the Dark Elf homeland, let alone in other lands that had been conquered? Suddenly, he saw that the soldiers were no longer standing rigid, but were looking at him, watching with anticipation, even eagerness. Saktar's own troops wanted him gone. It was something that had always puzzled Ben during the brief periods when he'd studied history in school. Where there was someone truly horrible in power, why could no one gather the courage to face and remove such a tyrant? And now, here he was, a young human, with the Dark Elf King at his feet and the chance to stop a true dictator. He looked back at the Dark Elf and saw that the purple under his hand seemed to be growing. Grabbing the sword, Ben pulled it free of its scabbard once more.
"What you have said is something to ponder another day. Today, I have decided. Me, not this sword, and not the power that the council invested in it, that you no longer rule here. There may be another king of the Dark Elves, but if so, it will be someone who lets his people live freely, not rules them with an iron fist."
Ben's eyes narrowed, and Joshua pulled the shield back on and stepped next to his friend.
"Now get up, I know you are almost healed, and I'm not going to run this sword through you unarmed.
Saktar narrowed his eyes and stood, hand coming away from the wound that was now almost closed. He opened his hand, and the black sword flew through the air. The massive dark elf caught the blade with a mighty roar, and in two great strides he stood over Ben and Josh, bringing the colossal sword crashing down with all his strength. Ben moved to the left, and for once Joshua didn't block, but simply twisted to the right, and let the sword smash down on the tiles, sending fragments flying. Turning on his heel, Ben brought the sword around in a wicked arc, white blazing from the tip as it sliced into the ancient king's neck, shearing his head clean off. Purple light exploded in all directions, throwing them both off their feet. Ben held his hand in front of his face, trying to see as the sword at his side blazed like the sun. The throne room shook, and great tiles and pieces of rock started falling. Joshua ran over and put the shield over them. "We've got no time," he shouted to Ben. They huddled together as the very ground they were sitting on shook, chunks of the building slamming down all around them. All they could do was hope. From the air around them, from every direction, came a whisper that could somehow be heard over the destruction of the palace as Saktar's voice reached them for the last time.
"This isn't over. There will be others after me. There always are."
The last word echoed as the walls collapsed. Ben's last thought before he lost consciousness was that at least he knew with certainty that the Dark Elf King was finally dead. Chapter 35. Turning of the Tide. The Institute was still holding the line, but only just. Men holding spellshooters stood next to the Royal Infantry from the British Army, machine guns and magical weapons firing in a constant heavy racket. The Dark Elves pushed forwards, bolts of magic smashing through the ranks, elven pike battalions forcing their way through with airborne Dark Elves on steeds of all kinds, raining down fire and power on the Institute's flanks. Saktar's field generals had been smart, gaining a foothold in Ireland at the beginning, as well as in Scotland. From there, they had employed a pincer technique, a driving force landing directly in Dover and pushing up, while at the same time two armies came in from the sides, crossing from Ireland on the west into Wales, and from their position in Scotland down through Newcastle on the northeast. While the Dark Elves tried to reinforce and strengthen their position in Scotland, they moved slowly and continuously south. Thankfully for the Institute, the Scots always managed to give them a resounding battering. The Institute was working directly with the British government now, as well as with the Queen and the Royal Princes. Set up in London, the war room was a constant state of controlled confusion. One of the princes was apparently even now part of a counterstrike, the RAF holding back dragons and wyverns, giant eagles and dark pegasi. Just as they had thought they were holding their own, an elite unit of Saktar's Royal Household Guards had appeared in the centre of London. Thankfully, there was a director on the scene, just back from the front at Dover. Alex wiped sweat out of his eyes, squinting through the smoke of blazing nearby buildings. Without turning around, he barked a command to his unit, instinctively knowing where they were. "Axel, take your team and circle around to Spur Road. Durnham, you take Constitution Hill. We've already got a squad covering them all." He hardly heard their replies, knowing already they would obey without question. He turned to the SAS captain who was with him. "Let me ask you, why, oh why, is Buckingham Palace possibly the least defensible structure ever built? You'd think if the royalty were going to live somewhere, there would at least be a wall, a moat, something." The captain nodded, but didn't comment. He had seen a lot of action, but not with any of the Institute, and Alex had seen the man skeptically eye his holstered spellshooter a few times. For now, he didn't question, however, as Alex had been put in command. "Okay, they're going to come in from all sides and come in hard. These are the elite of the elite in the Dark Elf Army. You've got the rounds that our allied elves provided, right? Nothing else will make a difference." The captain unshouldered his gun and pulled out the magazine, bullets shining brightly. "I have no idea what they did to these, but yeah, all my team have them." Alex nodded, looking around. He flipped a golden coin and caught it out of the air.
Okay, let's get into position.
They moved fast, going around the back of the palace itself. Most of the SAS were positioned all across the top, but Captain Jones's team was with him. Advancing in a crouched jog, they went through some little-known passageways and came around the back, spreading out. Not a moment after they entered the clearing, the attack started. Dark elves descended upon them, moving like smoke. Cloaks of purple so dark they were almost black. Knives spinning through the air. Two of the SAS went down before they noticed, but Alex threw himself into a roll and came up smoothly, pulling out not one, but two spell shooters. Firing like a Wild West gunfighter, he used spells that were narrow but powerful. A bolt of ice so thin it could hardly be seen took one dark elf in the eye. From his other spell shooter, a jet of gas engulfed another, choking him. Alex saw white bolts of light shooting out faster than he could track, but in a controlled stream. Silently impressed with the captain's composure when faced with dark elves for the first time, he continued his work. It was a little-known fact in the Institute that the Director of Trade had been one of the best spell swords ever, a fact that had led to his becoming one of the youngest directors in the Institute's history. Suddenly, a band of dark elves launched itself straight at them.
Cover me!
Alex holstered one spell shooter, and from the other shot a spell that immediately transformed into a long bow staff of blinding white light. He sprinted straight at the dark elves, his unit fanning out to the left and right. He just caught a shout from the captain as he ran.
He's mad! Covering fire now!
Alex bowled into the dark elf elite, staff whipping about in a constant blur, power streaming out to create a protective shield and a deadly sharp disc at the same time. As the two opposing forces smashed together, he saw how many there really were. A fleeting thought crossed his mind that he might have overextended this time. A huge elf came at him, with two others obviously singling Alex out. He disarmed one and knocked the other out, but the large one battered at him. Barely keeping the massive sword at bay, Alex moved backwards, step by step. He was taking heaving breaths, his muscles aching like never before. Then it happened. The sword knocked his staff aside, and the elf moved in. Alex threw himself backwards, but he knew he was done. The sword went back, and the elf stopped. In fact, all the elves stopped, confusion evident on their faces. They looked at each other, and suddenly the large elf let out a wail so full of anguish it made Alex's heart grieve in some strange emotional echo. Alex held up his hand and his unit fell back. As they watched, the dark elf elite unit all came together and strangely, in unison, knelt as one, heads bowed. A full minute passed in total silence. The wind blowing and the sound of the leaves in the trees the only thing that could be heard. As quickly as it had begun, the unit rose and moved away, so fast it seemed like they had never really been there. Captain Jones came up to him from behind.
What was that about? For a minute there I thought it was over.
Alex could only shake his head.
I'm not sure, but I have a feeling.
A great roar came from above, and they all crouched down immediately, looking up to see a huge black dragon.
Great, this really isn't my lucky day.
Alex grabbed the captain and pulled him close so he could be heard over the huge beast's continuous screaming. Captain, I told you this might happen. Get your men to positions of cover and change your weapons to long-range anti-aircraft. As he went to go, the captain grabbed him.
But what about you?
Alex shook him off.
You'll see.
Captain Jones rounded up what was left of his SAS unit. He was impressed with how well they had done, all things considered, but felt a jolt of sorrow for those he had lost already. It was hard to believe what they were facing. Something out of a story like those his young sons liked to read, but nothing that he had ever considered would happen in the real world.
Jackson, get the men under cover, now!
He followed his own advice and sprinted to the side of the palace, crouching down and looking up while swapping one weapon for another. He pulled out his cross and kissed it, praying harder than he ever had.
If there is anyone up there, I'd appreciate a bit of a hand.
He looked around and saw off to the left a few dim figures that seemed to launch toward the black dragon, breathing a stream of fire down at the Canada Gate.
Hang on. That couldn't be.
Grabbing his radio, he opened the frequency to all his units.
All units, focus covering fire.
We've got friendlies up there taking out that huge scary thing. Let's help them out.
Alex rode his great eagle alone with three wyverns soaring behind him, two riders on each.